Glad you cleared that up. This is VOA One The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Katie and I will be joined by Dan Novak, Gregory Stockel, and Anna Mateo. Dan brings us a science story about sperm whales who live in the Caribbean Sea. Then, Gregory Stockel has a story about a new planet astronomers have found using the James Webb Telescope. They say it has one similarity to Earth, an atmosphere. Then, Katie joins me for a story about how the study of artificial intelligence is creating new pathways for students to find jobs in hospitality. Finally, Anna Mateo is here to talk about a phrase that is important to wheat farmers, language lovers, and those who enjoy a nice piece of bread. Now, here's Dan Novak.
Researchers say they can explain how sperm whales that live around the Caribbean island of Dominica might be communicating. Like many whales and dolphins, sperm whales are highly social mammals. They communicate by squeezing air through their respiratory systems. That creates fast clicking sounds. The clicks are also used in the process of echolocation, which helps the whales find food. For years, scientists have been trying to understand what the sounds made by the whales mean, with little progress. While they still do not know, they now think the clicks make up a phonetic alphabet that the whales use. The researchers said the whales use the sound to make what are equivalent to words and phrases. "We are now starting to find the first building blocks of whale language," said Dave Gruber. He is founder and president of the Cetacean Translation Initiative. The nonprofit group uses machine learning and robotics to try to understand the communication of sperm whales. The study was published in the journal Nature Communications. The researchers examined more than 8,700 recordings of sperm whale clicks, known as codas. They have found four basic elements that they believe make up a phonetic alphabet. Pratyusha Sharma is the study's lead researcher. She said the whales can combine the phonetic alphabet in an unlimited number of ways. "It doesn't appear that they have a fixed set of codas," said Sharma. She is an artificial intelligence and computer science expert at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. "That gives the whales access to a much larger communication system," she added. Sperm whales have brains that weigh about 9 kilograms. They have the biggest brains of any known animal. Females live in groups of about 10 and sometimes meet up with hundreds or thousands of other whales. Sperm whales can grow up to 18 meters long and dive to nearly 1,000 meters to hunt for squid. They sleep vertically in groups. Gruber said sperm whales seem to have highly developed social ties. Understanding their communication system could show similarities with human language and society. In Dominica, there is a population of about 200 sperm whales. To get enough samples of clicks, scientists set up underwater recording equipment with microphones at different levels. Devices called tags were placed on the whales to record what position they were in when clicking. For example, the devices gathered information on whether the whales were diving, sleeping, or breathing at the surface. The tags also recorded whether there were any other whales nearby. The International Union for Conservation of Nature considers sperm whales vulnerable. The whales were hunted for hundreds of years, mostly for the oil contained in their large heads. The whale population is still recovering. Diana Rice is a marine mammal behavior and communication expert at the City University of New York. She said that scientists understand some parts of marine animals' communication well, including the whistles used by dolphins and the songs sung by humpback whales. But when it comes to sperm whales, scientists do not have even basic knowledge. Rice was not involved in the new research, but she said she hoped we would one day be able to connect the whales' clicks to behavior. We will never understand what the clicks mean to another whale, but we may be able to understand what the clicks mean enough to predict their behavior, she said. That alone would be an amazing achievement. I'm Dan Novak.
Astronomers have searched for years for rocky planets outside our solar system. They have finally found one with an atmosphere. Scientists believe that a rocky planet with an atmosphere is key to sustaining life. But the planet that astronomers found offers no hope for life. Its surface is made up of molten rock. Researchers recently called the planet a super-Earth. It is a rocky world much larger than our planet, but smaller than the gas giant in our solar system, Neptune. The planet orbits extremely close to its star. The star is less bright and smaller than our own. Observations using two devices aboard the James Webb Space Telescope suggest there is an atmosphere, but the atmosphere may not be able to support life. It could be continuously filled up by gases that large areas of molten rock release. Ren Yuhu is a planetary scientist with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory and California Institute of Technology. He was the lead writer of the study, which appeared recently in the publication Nature. Wu said, "The atmosphere is likely rich in carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide, but can also have other gases such as water vapor and sulfur dioxide." He added that current observations cannot tell what the exact atmospheric makeup is. The Webb data also did not make clear the thickness of the atmosphere. Who said it could be as thick as Earth's or even thicker than that of Venus? Venus has a toxic atmosphere that is the densest in our solar system. The planet is called 55 Cancri E. Scientists also call it Janssen. It is about 8.8 times more massive than Earth and about 2 times as wide. It orbits its star at 1/25th the distance between our solar system's innermost planet Mercury and the Sun. As a result, its surface temperature is about 1,725 degrees Celsius. One side of the planet probably always faces its star. Four other planets, all gas giants, are known to orbit the same star. The planet is found in our Milky Way galaxy, about 41 light years from Earth. A light year is the distance light travels in a year, or 9.5 trillion kilometers. The planet's star is gravitationally tied to another star in the system. Having two stars in the same system is called a binary system. The other star is a red dwarf, the smallest kind of an ordinary star. The distance between these two stars is 1,000 times the distance between Earth and the Sun. Light from one star takes 6 days to reach the other star. Although the rocky planet does appear to have an atmosphere, scientists say it probably should not even have one. Being so close to its star, any atmosphere should be taken away by the effects of the star. But gases dissolved in the planet's large ocean of molten rock may continue to fill up the atmosphere, Hu said. The planet cannot be habitable, Hu added. That is because it is too hot to have liquid water, which is also considered necessary for life. Scientists have found other planets with an atmosphere outside our solar system. But they have all been gaseous planets, not rocky ones. As the James Webb Telescope pushes the limits of space exploration, the discovery of a rocky planet with an atmosphere is a sign of progress. On Earth, the atmosphere warms the planet. It contains the oxygen people breathe and protects against the effects of the sun. It also creates the pressure needed for liquid water to remain on the planet's surface. Brice Olivier de Mori is a scientist at Switzerland's University of Bern's Center for Space and Habitability. He helped write the new study. He said, "On Earth, atmosphere is key for life." He added that the findings create hope that the Webb telescope may one day find cooler planets that could support liquid water on their surface. But, he said, "We are not there yet." I'm Gregory Stockel.
Artificial intelligence, or AI, is making its way into many parts of our lives. It can choose a coffee blend, or clothing, and even check fields of tulips for sick flowers. So it makes sense that AI is being used in the study of hospitality, says University of Florida professor Rachel J.C. Fu. Hospitality is a term to describe businesses like hotels, restaurants, tourism, and event planning. Fu said some of the newest tools permit students to practice real-life situations they might find while working at a hotel, a restaurant, or an event. And Chris Anderson, a business professor at Cornell University, says AI tools are already helping hotels with marketing and dealing with customers. Fu's recent book, Artificial Intelligence, Machine Learning, and Robot Applications in Hospitality Businesses, looks at the future of hospitality in the time of artificial intelligence. Fu says business students should be familiar with AI programming tools if they want a career in hotel or restaurant management. Fu told VOA, "You can already see AI and robots being used in the hospitality business quite a lot. For example, airlines use AI to deal with customer service, and airports use AI to manage cleaning work. AI can also be used to help sales." Fu said a robot followed her during a 2015 visit to a museum in her hometown in Taiwan. At the end of her visit, the robot told her about things that she could purchase at the gift shop. It also told her about other parts of the museum she might like to visit. the use of robots increased during the COVID-19 pandemic. They can do jobs that people who are worried about getting sick do not want. One example Fu noted is that robots are starting to be used to deliver food from hotel kitchens to people staying in a room. All you need to do is use your iPhone to scan and pick up your food, she said.
Anderson is a professor at the S.C. Johnson College of Business at Cornell. He centers his work on helping hospitality businesses, such as hotels and rental car companies, choose the right prices for their rooms and cars. He said most hotels already permit guests to use an app to check in and enter their rooms. At some point, airline passengers might be able to check in and board their plane with facial recognition. Although the technology seems complex, Anderson said the most important skill for a student is a desire to learn. In an email to VOA Learning English, he added, "People in these roles need to be flexible, take on new projects, and learn new skills." Anderson said students in technology or data study programs should consider working for hospitality companies. Digital marketing, distribution, and revenue management are very data and technology rich, he said, and large hospitality businesses need those skills. Fu added that when it comes to making hiring decisions, if a manager is considering two qualified candidates, but one has experience with AI, that person will be really valuable to the company.
Human beings can only be replaced by another human being when that person knows how to utilize AI.
Fu said one of the most important jobs in hospitality is called front of the house. That is the person who connects with customers when they arrive at a hotel or restaurant. Now, however, robots will be doing some of that work. But, she noted, humans should not be worried about losing their jobs to robots, because humans can use their creativity to move the industry and visitors' experiences to the next level. Eventually, artificial intelligence will be used to help a hotel or restaurant greet a visitor. If they permit their data to be shared, a hotel might know the visitor's favorite meal or drink and have it ready when they arrive. Carly Malone recently finished her studies in hospitality management at the University of Arkansas. She is now planning to study for an advanced degree in event management at New York University. For her final research paper, Malone talked with 9 top hotel business managers about AI. Malone said most businesses use AI in ways customers cannot see, such as looking at spreadsheets and making business plan suggestions. She said the topic of AI came up in her classes, but not many students seemed to be interested in it.
What I can tell from my other classmates, honestly, if there was 25 kids in my class, only probably 4 of us was talking about AI compared to the rest. A lot of people are still naive to the topic, I guess is the best way to put it.
At the University of Florida, there is an artificial intelligence and data analytics program for hospitality and event management. It requires students to take 3 classes covering the use of artificial intelligence and data collection in tourism and hospitality. Other universities have similar classes, and there are even short-term studies for those already working in hospitality. At Cornell, Anderson teaches a class that takes one weekend. It is aimed at those who are already working in the hospitality business and helps them see how AI can be used to make their jobs easier. Anderson notes that large hotel groups are only just beginning to use AI, so there are lots of opportunities as firms look to not get too far behind too early. Both Fu and Anderson say this provides an opportunity for international students in the U.S. to gain experience with hospitality companies during work programs or optional practical training. This is a global business, Fu said, noting that companies like Marriott, Hilton, and Hyatt have hotels around the world. Anderson suggested some young people can even gain experience at an international hotel in their home country and develop brand and industry-specific knowledge and use that to transition to the U.S. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On today's show, we talk about an expression that likely came from wheat growers a long time ago. Preparing harvested wheat involves an important step, separating the wheat from the chaff. Chaff is the outer covering of grain, the husk and other matter around the grain. Grain must be separated from chaff before it can be used for food. In farming, separating the wheat from the chaff is called winnowing or threshing. In English, the expression separating the wheat from the chaff means to decide which people or things in a group are good or important and which ones are not. Who or which things can you live without? This idiom describes a kind of sorting process. For example, if you are planning to go on a long hiking trip, you have to decide which things are necessary to carry with you and which things are not. Food and water need to make the cut. They need to be included. A long, heavy novel to read might not be such a good idea. If you do not separate the wheat from the chaff, your backpack will be too heavy. This idiom can also mean that you decide which things are valuable and which things have little worth. For example, let's say you are organizing a large neighborhood yard sale to raise money for a local charity. Many neighbors donate things they no longer need. Some are valuable and should get a high price, but other things are not worth much and should be low in cost. In this case, taking your time to separate the wheat from the chaff is time well spent. You do not want to see something valuable sold for too little money. It is for charity, after all. This idiom can also mean to separate people or things that are of high quality from those that are of low quality. Let's say you are hiring someone for a top position in your company. When you send the announcement out, you receive hundreds of applications. This is the first round of the process when you must separate the wheat from the chaff. You must determine the most qualified applicants for the second round of the process. That would include phone discussions and interviews. For a last example, let's talk about learning English. Online, you can find many resources that teach English, but they are not all good. It is up to you to separate the wheat from the chaff. Hopefully, VOA Learning English makes the cut. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English Podcast. We just heard this week's Words and Their Stories from Anna Mateo, and she joins us now to talk some more about the feature. Welcome, Anna.
Hello, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing great. Anna, can you remind our listeners about this week's phrase?
Sure, Dan. This week, I discussed separating the wheat from the chaff. This is a saying that comes from agriculture, from farming. When a farmer processes wheat, he or she must separate the nutritious grain from its protective covering.
Right. It's kind of a sorting process. You described a number of scenarios where people have to sort things out in life. You mentioned finding the best items at a yard sale or choosing the best people to interview for a job.
Exactly. It is a very useful expression that you can use in many situations.
Can you tell me about a time recently when you had to sort things out, maybe pick the best from a larger group?
Sure. So my brain creates a lot of ideas. This can be a blessing and a curse. Some of the ideas are good and some not so good. But I write all my ideas down in a notebook so that later on I can look at them. I can separate the wheat from the chaff and choose the ones I want to use.
Right. So you're separating the best ideas from all the other ideas, which I'm sure are very good.
Correct. There are some really bad ones, Dan, but you have to have the bad ones to get some good ones, correct?
If all of your ideas are only good, does that mean that any of them are good?
That's a lot of wheat. That's a lot of wheat. That's never happened. I always have some chaff with the wheat, if we can use the expression that way.
So, Anna, I've been hunting for something that actually uses wheat as its main ingredient.
Oh, really? What is that? Do tell.
So I'm looking for the best bread in San Diego. And as you know, and all of our listeners know, my wife and I just moved here. And we've been going to bakeries and farmers markets and trying to find the best bread. We have tried a market in the Little Italy neighborhood that has a number of bread sellers, a bakery in another part of the city that sends its bread around to local supermarkets, and the bread sold at a small coffee shop just about 2 kilometers from our home.
2 kilometers, you are very lucky. And it sounds as if you and your wife are working really hard to find that perfect bread.
Yeah, we are. I mean, it's a labor of love, of course, right? We're not working that hard, but we are enjoying the task.
It sounds, you are very lucky if that is one of your tasks.
Well, like I said, it's a tough job, but someone's got to do it.
Well, Dan, this seems like a very worthy project, separating the wheat from the chaff and finding the best bread in your new city. We should tell our listeners that is also a common expression. It's a tough job, but someone's got to do it. What Dan means is it's not a tough job, and he's enjoying every minute of it.
That's right. That's right. And just like I enjoy every minute speaking with you each week, we're going to have to get going because my wife and I are going to a new market today. We heard that there's a good bread maker there, so we have to go test it out.
Oh, well, that sounds like a great plan for your day. Please, all the best to your wife, and go check out this bread and let us know how it is. I'm sure we have some bread lovers listening.
And I'm sure we'll have some words in their stories where we need a follow-up for the bread quest.
Definitely. I'll start thinking. Take care, Dan.
Thanks, Anna. That's all the time we have for today's Learning English podcast. Thanks to all our VOA colleagues for their help on the program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedel.